This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch, grass-fed beef raised on California's Central Coast. Now available online through Larder Meat Company. Learn more at HearstRanch.com.
Hi, I'm Eli Sussman. Welcome to The Line here on Heritage Radio Network. On today's episode, I welcome Dario Wolos, the founder of Tecombi. When Dario was at Cornell, he participated in a business plan challenge where the idea for his company was born. After spending 5 years working at an internet startup in London after college, he wound up back in Mexico in 2005 living in Playa del Carmen. There, he purchased a VW bus and removed the engine and transmission, converting it into a taco restaurant, which he parked on Calle 12 in between the nightclubs. After the success in Playa del Carmen, he decided to take Tecombi to New York City. So the bus was shipped to Miami and then trailered up to New York City, where a landlord took a gamble on him and allowed him to park the VW bus inside what is now Tecombi Nolita. A fast expansion has followed, with a production facility producing goods for expansion into grocery stores in addition to the brick-and-mortar locations. With 10 locations around New York City, this growing chain is poised to open its first 2 locations outside of New York City in the next year. On this episode, recorded a few weeks ago, we spoke about the complexity of expansion, the community kitchen initiatives Tecombi has run during COVID, and how building a great business takes time. Now, on to the full interview with Dario Wolos of Tecombi.
Good to be talking with you again. It's been a long, long couple months since we were last on the phone with each other.
Yes, it has been a very special year, I think, to say the least. It's been an awesome experience when I look back at it in terms of personal growth and connections, with just so many people that we've all gone through this together, right? You know, fellow citizens and New Yorkers and people in Tecombi and family. It's just been intense. I'm sure it's been the same for you as well, no?
Yeah, I mean, we've had very different experiences. Just like it's very hard for any two people to compare their sort of COVID or quarantine experiences, but it's interesting and actually really nice to actually hear you talk about it in sort of an optimistic, maybe dare I say, positive way. Can you go in a little bit deeper on why it has been the type of experience that you've had? And if I'm wrong in qualifying it as a positive experience, then tell me, what kind of experience has it been for you since March, when there was a original shutdown of businesses and restaurants? And then you and I spoke in May, and in May you still had many of your locations shut down, but you were actually beginning to open up some of them. And now we're in December, and where are you at and where is the company at?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, it's been a year, I think, with a lot of ups and downs. And as personally, I've tried to navigate, this environment, for Tecombi, you know, a business and a project that I love very much. This whole time since COVID has begun, a lot of us within Tecombi have been connecting daily as this large team to discuss and manage our way through all the details of what it's taken to operate in this environment. And I think early on, we gave our internal Zoom call the name of Radio Tecombi. And it's become something that, you know, we, and when I say we, you know, I'm referring to all of my colleagues and me together, connect on every morning at 9 a.m. to kind of go through the goals and targets for the week as we've been trying to move as quickly as possible through all the challenges that have come our way, operating in this environment and trying to do the best for our employees and our customers alike.
I want to ask about some hard numbers, which are how many folks were employed at Tacombi pre-COVID and how many do you have working now and how many locations did you have pre-COVID and how many of those are open right now?
So there were a little more than 400 people working at Tacombi prior to COVID. And you know, on March 12th to the 15th, you know, as we began the process of shutting down, we laid off almost everyone but 20 people in our team, and you know, began this process of everyone that stayed on board. His responsibility was divided to be in touch with every single person that is part of Tacombi, as you know, trying to get an understanding of where they were personally and go through that process. And throughout all this, we've brought it back up to around 300 people, and right now we're starting to manage our way through. You know, what is this next shutdown? And then in terms of number of locations, we've actually just added the first location that we had planned to open at the end of the spring on the Upper East Side. We got our gas meter turned on today, so we're super excited about that. And we'll now have 9 Tacombi locations open, and it would have been 10, except we decided that the seasonal location that we have in Montauk, not to continue that anymore, and just focus on those locations that we can operate year round.
So you actually opened a new location, or are about to, as of December of 2020. In the midst of another shutdown, you've actually got another location that's come online. And besides having it in the pipeline and maybe, you know, having a lease that you couldn't get out of, are you excited about this new project in a way where you think that there's opportunity there right now during COVID? Or is this more of a long-term strategy where you think to yourself, we're getting a location open, we're going to weather the storm, and we've got a, you know, a 10 or a 15-year lease there, and it's going to end up making sense down the line?
I think it's the latter. You know, I think always had like a really long-term approach to everything at Tacombi. You know, I think, you know, I might have told you last time we spoke, but, you know, I've been, you know, drawing pictures in crayon of this story about Mexico that I wanted to share for a very long time. And so we've always kind of had this mindset of thinking long term and with any location, you know, when you go to opening a restaurant and putting, you know, all that energy into it, you know, that long-term approach. And so getting out of a lease was never really something that came to mind. It was just understanding, you know, how could we work out a win-win relationship with all the different stakeholders, you know, and in this case, the landlord, to help us weather that storm, because I think we believe that, you know, this will come to pass and you know, finding the right balance to, you know, keep people in the company and finding the way to do that so that they can provide for their families is, I think, also top of mind.
When you talk about having sort of a slow strategy or maybe a very long-term specific strategy, What does that look like? What is the location count, if that exists in your mind or in your, you know, boardroom executive discussions? How many Tacombis might you be looking to open? And also, what feeds into that decision making? What informs that strategy of how you intend to grow Tacombi, both in number of locations and also geographical locations, either other cities or making the decision to expand into other parts of the boroughs that you aren't in right now?
Since the very beginning, Tacombi as an idea was thought of as a vehicle in which we could share this story and perspective of Mexico. And so over time, it's been evolving, and the responsibility that goes with that has also been evolving. And I think a large part of, you know, building a hospitality brand is about creating opportunity for the many people that bring a hospitality experience to life. And the more time that we've dedicated ourselves to doing this, it's brought with it growth. And I think that has been coupled with this desire that I have from a very young age, to share Mexico, with the world because of all the beautiful things that I see in it, and the experiences that I've had growing up hosting people, from different parts of the world, in Mexico. And because there is this very special love in family that exists in Mexico, which is rooted in the tradition, which is rooted in its culinary history and the diversity across the country, I think all those things together that are Tacombi and what we're doing here, in terms of growing the places where we share that experience, it's been evolving alongside technology as well. And so in the United States, there's more than 45,000 Mexican restaurants of all types. And then in the world outside of the United States, there's some out there, but you have to look really hard to find experiences and people that are dedicated to sharing these traditions. And they exist, and you know, you see them more and more in you know, different corners of the globe. And with Tacombi, you know, we are trying to share this idea, you know, and as far as we can go. And I would, you know, love nothing more than to be able to, you know, share it in Tokyo and share it in all these different places. And, you know, similar to your question about the lease, like, these are just such long-term projects, to be able to do such things that over time you're, you know, from on the business side of things, just trying to run that balance between, you know, how do we continually get better, and not lose that magic that was core in the very beginning. And so as a company, we're looking, we're not looking. We've committed to a number of locations on the East Coast throughout this process and prior to COVID. And we'll be opening up Tacombis in Washington and Miami in the year ahead.
The difficulty of going from one location to two locations and then from two to five locations, as long as they're all in the same city, you can use a sort of a hub and spoke model where there's a commissary that feeds out into the other locations, or you could have sort of more autonomous locations that function independently and every location produces everything on site by themselves. But It's easier when everything's in New York City, for example. If you run out of an item, you can always move it from one location to another if you get in a jam, right? And you absolutely need to send tortillas or beef or something like that from location to another. But when you start opening up in other cities, you need to recreate that entire experience and that entire production model and quality control in another city. So how are you going to do that? How will you manage the quality control and the experience and the overall just day-to-day operations when you're in multiple cities? What's the mechanisms for making that a successful expansion?
Yeah, these are some of the things that you get to think about when you're not going out to a concert or to a movie theater or any of the things that you didn't get to do this year, right? Like these are some of the things that we've all been thinking about as we've been quarantining this time, and they're complex problems to solve for. And luckily, you know, there are a lot of people who have gone out and tried to solve these problems. They've written about it. There's, you know, all kinds of books from people who have, you know, built supply chain and built training. And so I think like most problems we've tried to solve, we do a lot of research, we put a lot of thought into it and ask a lot of people and how they think it would be best. And then we try to look at how we do things and create, you know, the best approach there. And, you know, so supply chain and training people, I think we're lucky, luckier than ever before that technology has really made this huge difference in how we're able to plug into local supply chains and find the quality and the mindset that we've developed intrinsically over the years from the time that, you know, we were in Playa del Carmen and the fish, you know, there was caught by the Cooperativa de Pescadores down there and to what it is here in New York and you know, how, you know, at one point working with Gossman's and Montauk and going through all this process to kind of find that right balance. And on the training and development side and sharing that, I think like as much as you're building a brand that is customer facing, you're also building an employee facing brand, right? And so trying to think about all the things that are important in that process. And it's, I think actually that is probably the most important and the most gratifying part of the whole process is, you know, we've branded it internally for ourselves as Mexican hospitality, you know, and it's based on values that we've learned from all the different types of hospitality experiences in Mexico and many of the awesome people that are in New York that hail from Mexico that contribute to the hospitality industry here and kind of in learning and watching them, we have tried to build this program that allows someone to put their heart into a trade or a specific task and turn that into a career. And so to solve both of those things that you asked in your question, I think it's trying to put those together and manage them at the right time with the right balance that allows them to be natural. And, you know, I'm really happy that, you know, just recently we promoted a young guy from Puebla, you know, who his family is from Puebla and he was born here and he's been with our business for 8 years now and started off with zero experience, but just those values that I was speaking of and is now the general manager of one of our locations and has gone through that process. And it's that kind of framework that he can now teach to other people and that we can try to create a system that allows for that ownership. And because hospitality is, you know, you're problem solving constantly throughout the day and on the different situations that arrive, that arise, you know, it's having, you know, that mindset is such a game changer. And throughout COVID is, you know, I think many people have learned, like, you were problem solving and adapting constantly, right, to the whole process.
In terms of how COVID has affected Tacombi, is in terms of the actual food and how you've changed or have not changed the way that you've either cooked the food and distributed to customers. And by that, I mean for dine-in or takeaway with all the new restrictions. And then the other way that I'm wondering about how COVID has affected Tacombi is just in the way that your staff deals with customers. Basically, it's been an entirely different, almost 10 months now, of indoor and outdoor restrictions and how people just interact with restaurants. So I'm wondering what changes you may have made over the last several months and what learnings you've gathered because of COVID.
So on food and preparing food, we've spent a great amount of time looking at the process and procedure for all the different things that go into making excellent food, right? And as we, you know, have been able to kind of look at every single process and try to be efficient in how we execute, in the short term, we decided to, you know, reduce the number of menu items and you know, try to kind of bring more focus to less items. So I think, you know, that piece there, you know, just allowed us to produce food faster and given that such a high percentage now was going to takeout and delivery. And I think working with all the purveyors to quickly adjust to like a different volume of business overall, as we've gone through the whole process. Delivery in general, you know, has grown substantially throughout this whole process, and we've tried to capture as much as possible through Tacombi.com, where, you know, we can have that connection with our customers and just be able to bring them up to speed for whatever it might be. And I think contact tracing is just like one of those things that has come out of COVID, where, you know, going through that process of being able to let a customer know if there is an issue or should they need to be tested or anything of that type. And so, you know, what COVID has really forced us to do from that point of view is be meticulous about every single thing that goes into our business and comes out of it, right? And as a food business, and I think many people can relate, you know, there are so many moving parts in that, which you have to control from the business point of view, but more importantly, you have to control it for the quality and a flavor point of view, and that you have that type of precision. And so I think that's been one of those positive things that just under this pressure and focus of COVID, we've made a lot of small improvements that over time have added up to be a net positive for us across Tacombi. And then I think on your second question, and this is something I've seen, you know, in New York as outdoor dining became a thing, is that people in New York have so much grit, and it is such a special type of individual that makes up, you know, this city, that, you know, when they were out in and enjoying, you know, this whole outdoor dining experience that is new to New York City, and made that energy is contagious, and it's, I think, made everyone so happy across, you know, our business. And I think when you're in hospitality, you know, one of the awesome things about this business is that it is that human interaction with so many people, and giving something that people thank you for, and that kind of virtuous circle that is hospitality. Customers in the city, I'd say, on average, have been incredibly helpful and supportive. Following all the guidelines that have been set out there, holding their masks, you know, when someone comes to the table, wearing the mask when they go into to use the facilities or whatnot. That whole process has, I think, just formed like a stronger bond. And I feel this is like one of those positive things I was referring to early on. It's this bond and connection that's happened on a different level throughout COVID, and that relationship between the regulars in each of the neighborhoods that we've been lucky to share Tacombi in has been a really cool thing.
One of the interesting innovations that came out of COVID was this, the outdoor dining and the ability to increase your footprint outside the four walls of your restaurant and have either a space on the sidewalk or a space in the street. As a business owner, more seats mean potentially more food purchases and higher revenues. So I'm wondering, did outdoor dining help you dramatically? Are you excited for next year when there could be outdoor dining and there's hopefully no COVID? And then also, does outdoor dining and its continuation in future years as a program, does it make you evaluate real estate opportunities by looking at places where perhaps you may have not considered before? Since outdoor dining seems like it's a program that's going to continue moving forward?
I think outdoor dining is one of the coolest things that's happened to, you know, cultural life in the city. And like I was mentioning just now, with respect to the customers, you know, to be able to walk around the streets of our city and see people, see how all of the different restaurants of the city have applied their creativity to sharing that experience out on the street has been like one of the I think coolest aspects of the whole thing, right? And so you know, instead of, you know, people being, you know, behind closed doors and you know, inside of all these restaurants, that they're all out on the street, and that activity and that energy is out there. And no matter where you go in the city, it's created this really cool new environment. And I think even in the cold months ahead, you know, the opportunity for the city to kind of live its Nordic, you know, true Nordic roots, given that we are in a pretty Nordic latitude or whatever you want to call it, is another cool thing that I think people, you know, will get to explore and get more comfortable with being outside and finding ways like they do in many northern cities or in the mountains around the world, where, you know, you have different ways to eat outside in the cold weather, right? And it definitely breaks down a lot of barriers for people in terms of being able to have that experience out on the street, and hopefully will lead to, you know, a healthier city with, you know, less congestion in the future as you know, policymakers look at like the different things that they can do to reduce the number of cars on the road and whatnot. But it's a really cool thing, and it was a lifeline for the business throughout this whole process. Absolutely. We have put a lot of effort into that whole aspect of what we do at Tacombi in terms of being able to share that experience and make it comfortable for the guests, make it a place that they want to come and hang out in no matter what the weather is. And it's challenging, and like a lot of the problems we've had to solve this year, it's one of the more fun problems, I'd say, to solve in terms of, you know, playing with the different materials that you can and the guidelines that the city has put up. In terms of looking at real estate and choosing it based on that, you know, if this becomes a permanent thing, and as I've read and heard that many people want it to, we'll definitely take that into account. It's, you know, something that I personally, you know, have enjoyed going to different places in the city. So I'm looking forward to more of that.
The food program that you were just talking about, we spoke about it last time, but can you go into a little bit more detail about it? How is it? Is it funded out of Tacombi Profit? And where do you deliver the meals to, and how are they distributed?
So it we have a foundation that we set up a couple years ago. When I started Tacombi back in 2006, my intention and in building the brand was to build this company that could share with the world all these beautiful things that we see in Mexico, and in exchange for that, invest in education in Mexico. And this is something that's personally very important to me, and just part of my own mission. And as Tacombi has been growing and breaking that barrier into profitability over the years, because it's definitely taken a while to get there, we've been contributing to different efforts one off, you know, throughout many times throughout the year, and put it together. And this awesome woman joined our team, Susana Camarena, and she worked for a foundation in New York City called Qualitas that focused on financial literacy for immigrants. So helping people that were unbanked acquire the skills so that they don't, you know, lose such a large percent of their paycheck, for example, to these, you know, check and cash type systems, right? And she joined our team, and we've been building, you know, the concept behind the foundation. And when all this happened, we repurposed it specifically for the need that we had identified in terms of the food insecurity that had just exploded in the city because of the situation. And, you know, we reached out to our network and raised funds and reached out to different types of organizations. Grubhub, you know, one of our partners made a significant donation to the program, and all kinds of awesome people anonymously donated, you know, significant checks to the program. And our customers have been ordering and adding at the end of their check a number of different options we have to this program. And as we've gone through this whole process of COVID, and I'd say, you know, for lack of a better word, stabilized our business with, you know, with the plan in terms of how we're going to get through all this, which is, you know, working with our landlords and working with everyone else together to find this solution. We have been making this switch so that a percentage of Tacombi's overall revenue will go to continually supporting this program. And in fact, we made the decision that, you know, we will fully donate Cinco de Mayo going forward to this program. So all the revenue across all our stores and any events that we can create in and around this will go to using Cinco de Mayo to raise awareness for, you know, these causes related to that the Tacombi Foundation is focused on.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of The Line here on Heritage Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Hearst Ranch. The Hearst family has raised cattle on California's Central Coast since 1865. Today, Hearst Ranch's signature product is their 100% grass-fed, completely hormone and antibiotic-free beef. The Hearst Ranches have always treated their animals with great care. Their cattle live a completely natural existence as foragers and grazers. well-managed grazing fertilizes the land naturally, sustains a seasonal rhythm to the ranches, and produces a remarkable meat whose flavor is the authentic taste of the American West. Hearst Ranch beef is available seasonally, May through August, in select Whole Food markets throughout California, and all year round at their retail locations in San Simeon and Paso Robles. And now, HRN listeners in Arizona, Nevada, and California can get Hearst Ranch beef delivered right to their door through Larder Meat Company. Go to lardermeatco.com and shop the 100% grass-fed box to stock your freezer with Hearst Ranch beef. That's L-A-R-D-E-R, meatco.com. Learn more about the storied history, farming practices, and conservation efforts of Hearst Ranch at hearstranch.com.
Welcome back to The Line on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Eli Sussman. Let's pick up the second half of my conversation with Dario Wolos of Tacombi right now.
As you look to grow and have new initiatives, did you in the last couple years, or are you planning to, in the next couple years moving forward, take on any institutional investment or private investment in order to grow? Or do you plan, is it your intention to continue to grow Tacombi strictly from within by using profit and revenue in order to further the growth of the company?
Financing this type of business is a tough one. As anyone, you know, who's been in the restaurant business, right? And what it takes to financially to make a restaurant or a hospitality experience happen. And I was very lucky a couple years ago to meet this very successful Mexican entrepreneur who has many locations around Mexico and a number of other Latin American countries. And he gave me this really good advice, you know, that as a leader for this business, you know, one of my responsibilities is to constantly lower our cost of capital. And it's a loaded term because it's hard to understand exactly what that means at different times throughout the business. But that general idea of just trying to get the cheapest possible capital to grow the business, I think can be matched with capital that has that experience to challenge you or to, you know, push you and advise you. And when you're in this process of brand building and business building and trying to go bigger. And so I think, you know, bringing those different pieces together to be able to share Tacombi in Tokyo and to be able to share Tacombi in Omaha and Cleveland, Ohio, and you know, all the different places that I would love to be able to share Tacombi, I think will definitely require more capital than the business can produce to get to that next level. That goes back to one of the questions you asked a while ago, which was about like supply chain and training. And it's kind of like building those systems. In order to see it, I think in my lifetime, right? Because being a little selfish here, and I do want to see it in my lifetime. I want to be there when we get to take these things that were started, you know, in Playa del Carmen 15 years ago, to all these different places, and I hope kind of be this connection to Mexico that will even entice people to want to visit Mexico itself and explore it in the way that we do, and hopefully you know, share all these things that we've seen and be able to offer, you know, good advice to people who want to go on their own adventures in Mexico.
You're going to be 15 years into this journey, and you're still obviously in the thick of it. You have multiple locations, but you've articulated that you have much more that you want to do. But folks must come to you all the time. Maybe people that work for you, maybe people that don't, and they're probably asking you for advice. And I'm wondering if you can distill down a little bit of advice that you would give to someone, perhaps that works for you for a certain amount of time, or someone from outside your organization who might say, I think I have a good idea and I want to start it as a food business. What would you suggest to that person, knowing what you know now?
I would say to them to put their heart into it. And I would also say to them to not put a timeline on it in terms of the evolution of these things, you know, to think long term. I think, you know, those two things I think are fundamental to the success that idea has had by itself. And then if you're lucky, those two things will allow you to surround yourself and be in the presence of really awesome people who will help you bring that idea or your vision to reality, because it takes so many different people and the support of so many people outside of yourself and your own passion to make something like that happen. And to be open to listening to all those people in terms of what they say, not to do everything they tell you, right? Obviously you have to make your decisions there and find ways to go through that process. And if you can bring those things together and not give up, you know, design your adventure or your mission so that you can go somewhere that you think will be fun, and that you get to have fun in the process, then you can go after these things. And I think, like, you know, no matter what it is, right? No matter what the endeavor, and, you know, the awesome people that are, you know, making the vaccines possible, for example, right? That have been able to bring these things and they've been on their path, you know, to make that happen for so many of us. You know, I think there is this wonderful thing in the human to problem solve, that, you know, in this business of hospitality and sharing a perspective on a tradition and a culture, on all the many different ways that it's done around the world, is such a cool thing to come back to. And I think it's something that this year more than ever, it's been made clear how important that is in our lives. How important it is, a service to each other that we carry on in hospitality that can only be made possible by all these other things, such as the vaccine in this case, if you do have an idea in hospitality you want to carry through, I think those things will help you get there through the thick of it.
People in the United States, I think on the whole, consider Mexican food and tacos to be an inexpensive, fast item. And I'm wondering if that has hampered your abilities at all to be successful. It seems like what you would consider sort of upscale Mexican food is a more recent innovation to New York City specifically. That's what I can speak to, just seeing some restaurants that have opened here that have a higher price point. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are on how people interact with Mexican food in the United States, and whether or not what you can charge is in line with what you think you should charge.
Price, I think from the point of view of the customer, can be used in many different ways. And I think, you know, to your question, you know, a high price or a low price sends a message to the customer as to what that product or service might have behind it, right? And Mexican food as a cuisine is labor intensive and probably more complex to make than a lot of the European cuisines that command really high prices, right? And I've kind of always asked myself, you know, why can a European or Japanese artisan, for example, command more for their work than an artisan from Kenya or Mexico or a number of different places, right? And I think, you know, the craftsmanship and intensity and passion that goes in across the board is equal, right? And it becomes price then becomes a positioning point from that point of view. And, you know, across the United States, we had Taco Bell, which, you know, for decades now is positioned and introduced many people to the palate or this idea of what Mexican food, you know, might be like or something, which I think, in, you know, you can look at it as a good thing in terms of it's opened the palate to, you know, millions and millions of people to these ideas that Mexican food is based on. And I think the proliferation now of people sharing all these awesome things about Mexico is just something I think we're all lucky to get to enjoy. And as a restaurateur, you know, the way that you build that structure up, that price structure up, accounts for your perspective. And if your perspective includes a certain quality of ingredients and a certain amount of effort in the service and a certain amount of effort in the decor and then effort in the disciplines in terms of, you know, hygiene and sanitation and all these different things, well, it's going to cost more than, you know, different ways of putting that same equation together, right? And so I think, you know, the appreciation that so many chefs are driving for Mexican cuisine and the variety and the diversity of traditions and techniques that come from the many different regions of the country are a really good thing. And I think it's an awesome way for Mexican communities in the United States to connect with people that are not of the same background and to share something special and offer that connection between them. And so the price point will be, you know, based on how they decide to put those things together. And I think in the case of Tacombi, you know, we've tried to find the balance that gives a lot of attention to the quality of the ingredients and a lot of intention to the quality of Mexican hospitality and how we build that up and invest in it to make that connection. And, you know, we found that, you know, the balance that we've achieved works for us and the way Tacombi is set up. And, you know, I think it's something that, you know, we can continue to do and share with more people. And, but it really is that positioning, right? And I remember, you know, when I was young and seeing Starbucks for the first time and understanding, you know, the difference of what it cost for a coffee there versus the type of coffee that was available. And as you kind of put that whole experience together, this all the labor that goes into making coffee and, you know, from the time the seed is sown and then harvested to all the process that makes it to your cup, commanded this price that people obviously, love throughout the world and continue to love and has created this whole new generation of coffee shops that take it even further, right? And so I think the stuff that we're doing in Tacombi has always had this guideline of trying to best respect the traditions, not modify them, not change them, but respect them and honor them in the process of sharing them. And we found these ideas in many different parts across Mexico and brought that into Tacombi. And, that's what this experience is about. And that's what has helped us define the price structure for that.
Obviously, COVID is not going to magically disappear at the end of this year. But as we get to the end of 2020, what are you looking forward to in 2021? And how are you going to use 2020 in order to propel yourself personally and the business forward?
I'm looking forward to taking a break, having a little rest sometime soon. There has not been much this year. And I know that goes for everyone that I work with, and all the people in our industry that have kind of worked around the clock to see their businesses through this whole environment. I think there have been so many positive learnings, and I hope to use all of those to make Tacombi better, to be better myself, and push the business and myself and the people that I work with, to the next level and just to be part of that process and enjoy the journey. I'm thankful just to be here after all this because it just has been so intense.
Dario, thanks so much for taking time to speak with me today.
It was my pleasure. I really appreciate it. It's great to talk with you and reflect on this year and what it really means.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Line on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Eli Sussman. To find all the episodes of The Line, you can go to heritageradionetwork.org/The Line or on Spotify by searching for The Line Heritage Radio Network or on Apple iTunes podcasts. Thanks for listening.
The Line is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners just like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.